DHS leaders want to take the Homeland Security Information Network, or HSIN, to the next level. The program connects 18,000 state, local, and tribal police departments and 60,000 first responding agencies. DHS says it's now turned a page on HSIN authentication. The network now verifies users according to their roles and responsibilities, not just names and passwords. More now from Federal News Radio's Nicola Grisco.
It's been 10 years since DHS first designated the Homeland Security Information Network, or HISN, as its official information sharing platform. Now, HISN has the ability to do something the department has talked about for a while in the identity management space. It can now control a user's access to the platform based on his or her attributes and job function, not just the person's name. Donna Roy is the Executive Director of the Information Sharing Environment Office at DHS.
That seems like a phantom thing that would supposedly happen next year. Guess what? We're doing that right now, right? So right now, I would say that we have identity services and what we're calling trusted identity exchanges, or capabilities for a definition of Donna Roy as a human being that works in the Department of Homeland Security at the unclassified level, replicated up at the secret level, replicated up at the top secret level. So my identity sort of is the same on all networks. What's even cooler is that sort of identity exchange at the unclassified level also provides identity out to the definition of me as I interoperate with sort of my other federal partners or with RIS, right? So one capability, one definition of Donna Roy, but that sort of gets propagated out for use.
So that means HISN, at the department level at least, recognizes the full spectrum of a person's job and connects that person only to the data and systems the user needs. In Roy's case, she develops IT capabilities. But she also hires people. She pays the bills and other administrative work. HISN then would connect her to the data she needs to do that work. This new kind of identity management strategy is all part of the department's broader goal to create a better experience for its users. Luke McCormick is the DHS Chief Information Officer.
When we first built those systems, same over in DOJ, I think both of us, they were built in more of an isolated kind of environment. As they've grown up and become a bigger experience, the interfaces have come together. And so what you're going to see is a deeper experience with things like federated search, right, where you'll be able to log on with your credentials through HISN and get access to capability within HISN, but some of the capability over in DOJ, et cetera. That's one of the things that our user community has discussed with us and asked for, is a deeper, more thorough experience. So, you know, we're gonna continue to broaden into these different sectors, because we think that's important and there's a lot of unmet demand out there.
DHS is also moving HISN to the cloud. Here's McCormick.
We're lowering our costs so we can take some of that O&M cost and plow it back into more capability. I mean, Donna every year works very closely with her user community, and she has a workforce that's out in the field in the fusion centers, all 73, I think it's 73, 78 fusion centers that are out there. And we have folks out in the field outreaching to the local community to pull those requirements in.
HISN now connects 18,000 police departments and 60,000 first responding agencies, plus 78 fusion centers. But deploying the same identity management strategy to these state and local agencies and their systems, well, that's a different story. Two-factor authentication is a heavy lift for those local agencies right now. Jeremy Wiltz is the Deputy Assistant Director for the FBI's Criminal Justice Information Services Division.
What we found at CJIS is it's been a challenge to get down to the 18,000 law enforcement agencies to have them do two-factor authentication, right? It's an expensive undertaking. Their systems aren't necessarily ready for two-factor.
At the federal level, though, Roy says DHS had been working to boost their two-factor authentication standards for both privileged and unprivileged users well before the two major cyber breaches last summer at the Office of Personnel Management. But the administration's 30-day cybersecurity sprint forced DHS and many other agencies to make it a bigger priority. Roy says now about 96 to 97% of all users use two-factor authentication at DHS. Agencies are also looking at other indicators, though, when it comes to identity management. Jeremy Wiltz.
I think the other thing we're beginning, I think, to dive into is behaviors of a user, right? So if you've never been on, if your user account has never logged into a router ever before, why are you now logging in, right? And why are you doing things in a system admin-like way that you never have done before? And why are you trying to get to things that you've never done before? So, I mean, there are different, and to Donna's point, we do the same thing at Seed, just we have layers, right? So the idea is there's a gauntlet before you can get to the jewels.
DHS is deploying a similar strategy to its data framework. It's where some of the department's most sensitive data gets stored. Here's Donna Roy.
What we're doing is creating platform that we're putting some of our most sensitive data in the department. And we are controlling access not by anyone's name. So Donna Roy does not have an account on this thing called the data framework. Donna Roy does have an identity stored somewhere in the department. And there are attributes of my identity, none of which are my name, sort of used to get access to that big data platform. Mm-hmm. What is being used are attributes about me, attributes about my job and my authorized purpose and function. And then information about the data itself and how we protect it and how much I can have, given I am Donna Roy and what I'm doing. And so all of that sort of dynamic access control, that's working today.
The dream, though, she says, is to take a lot of this technology mobile. Roy compared it to the way someone might download music on multiple devices.
Your music is ubiquitous, right? If you have an MP3 file, and you can play it on your iPhone, you can play it on your Samsung, you can sort of play it on a really old piece of technology like a CD player. That's where I want the government data to be, right? So we can pass information around cross jurisdictions at an event, and so you don't have to understand that if you need access to that data, the data should start coming to you when you need it, and only the data you need for that decision point. So I think we're getting really, really close at some of the higher level things that we're doing on the classified side, and those technologies are propagating down into more common approaches.
In Washington, Nicole Ogrisco, federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Read Nicole's story and share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive and click share with friends.